Okay, I think everybody's set up. Would the clerk please call the case?
The court will now call in the matter of Levi Bennett's court. Mr. Mark W. Bennett will argue for Levi. Mr. Steve W. Collier will argue for the state.
May it please the court. My name is Mark Bennett, and along with Stephanie K. Patton, I represent the appellant in this case and the First Amendment. The law of First Amendment overbreadth, as it applies in this case, is really fairly simple. If you look at the United States Supreme Court case of U.S. versus Alvarez, the question first is whether the statute restricts speech. The statute in this case restricts speech. It restricts photography, which is speech, and it restricts the broadcast, the transmission, the promotion of photographs, which is also speech. If a content restricts speech, the next question is whether it restricts speech based on its content. We have a U.S. Supreme Court authority, the case of Discovery Network versus Cincinnati, in which the U.S. Supreme Court called common sense the rule that if you have to look at the content of the speech to determine whether it violates the statute, then the statute is a content-based restriction, as opposed to a content-neutral restriction. And every restriction on speech is either content-based or content-neutral. So a content-neutral restriction is one that doesn't depend on the content of the speech. In this case, the statute restricts speech based on its content. The next question is whether the statute restricts unprotected speech. The United States Supreme Court has recognized various categories of historically unprotected speech. Outside of those narrow categories, speech is protected. Speech is not unprotected simply because it invades privacy or because it's intended to invade privacy. The state has latched on to a quote from a case called Cohen versus California. It's in my brief. It's 403 U.S. 15, where the U.S. Supreme Court talks in dicta. This is the fuck the draft case. The U.S. Supreme Court talks in dicta about how some invasions of privacy might be essentially intolerable. But what the U.S. Supreme Court is talking about there is not speech about somebody violating the person's privacy, but rather speech to somebody violating the person's privacy. As in the case of Scott versus Texas, or it may have been ex parte Scott, the telephone harassment statute from the Court of Criminal Appeals cited Cohen versus California. That statute was about making a person's telephone ring repeatedly.
Can we talk about some of the cases that actually looked at the statute in question here?
Yep.
Your brief was filed October the 27th, 2006. Is that correct?
2016,
I'm sorry.
I suppose probably.
You didn't file a reply brief, did you?
I did not.
You're aware that a case came out the same day you filed your brief called Ex Parte Houston?
Yep.
Would you explain to the court why the language used by this court in Ex Parte Houston doesn't preclude some of the arguments you're making today?
Absolutely. Ex Parte Houston was an 11.072 writ where the person had already been put on probation for violating this portion of the statute. What Mr. Houston argued was that Ex Parte Thompson required his probation to be reopened, 11.072 writ, essentially his conviction to be undone, because Ex Parte Thompson had held the statute unconstitutional. Ex Parte Thompson did not hold the statute unconstitutional, and that's what Ex Parte Houston holds, is Ex Parte Thompson did not address this part of the statute. In Ex Parte Houston, the parties didn't even brief the constitutionality of this part of the statute, and indeed, under the Court of Criminal Appeals rule in Carena versus State, the parties in Ex Parte Houston couldn't argue the unconstitutionality of this part of the statute because the Court of Criminal Appeals has said in Carena versus State that the unconstitutionality of a statute cannot be raised for the first time after the trial. There's a case out of Houston, I don't remember if it's published or not, it's Ex Parte Jeff Jennings, in which the first Court of Appeals applied this to an 11.072 writ. So in answer to your question, Justice Pittman, Houston was not about addressing the constitutionality.
I understand that, but didn't this court, at least in dicta, approve the constitutionality of the statute at issue here?
I would say that the Court of Criminal Appeals in dicta approved the constitutionality of the statute at issue here. I don't see that in Houston.
Okay.
But dicta, this court's dicta is not binding upon this panel.
I understand that. I'm just seeking some guidance.
Sure. And that's what I'm here for, Justice. I'm not here to argue. I'm here to help you out. Court of Criminal Appeals has said so in dicta. This court, you might argue that in Houston, this court said so in dicta. Neither of those are binding on this court. This panel needs to take a look at the substance of the argument for the first time. It hasn't been discussed by the U.S. Supreme Court. It hasn't been discussed by the Texas Supreme Court. It hasn't been decided by this court, and hasn't even been decided by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. Now, in Ex parte Thompson, the court, Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, in dicta approved this part of the statute. They cited to Cohen versus California, which I was talking about, 403 U.S. 15. If you compare Cohen versus California to the Keefe case out of the U.S. Supreme Court from 3 weeks earlier, that's 402 U.S. 415, in Keefe, the U.S. Supreme Court talks about the difference between blocking the flow of information into the household, as in the Scott case, that is making the telephone ring repeatedly, interrupting our privacy by actually sending something into our household, as opposed to the blocking the flow of information about us. This intolerable invasion of privacy language isn't about speech about a person. It's not about you saying something about me that violates my privacy. It's about you saying something to me that violates my privacy. And the Keefe case makes clear that while a law can forbid the speech that violates my privacy by being to me, by coming into my household, by yelling with a bullhorn outside my bedroom window, invading my privacy in that way, there is no category of unprotected speech that allows the state to forbid speech because it violates the privacy of the subject of the speech.
But isn't this type of invasion of privacy intolerable in our society?
This type of invasion of privacy...
The facts of this case.
I'm not familiar with the facts of this case because it's an as-written challenge to the constitutionality of the statute rather than an as-applied challenge. So I can't address that. I'm sorry, Justice Sutter. The allegations under the statute, I can address the allegations in the petition. The allegations in the petition, is it essentially intolerable? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Until there's a category of unprotected speech into which this speech falls, and there is no such category, the speech is protected. So we don't want people taking photographs of us when we're in intimate circumstances, and we don't expect it, and we don't consent to it. I agree to that 100%. But there are lots of harms that we don't want happening to us that because of the First Amendment, the state does not have the power to forbid. Invasions of privacy. The media invades people's privacy when they write stories about them that they don't want written. I read a quote recently, I can't remember who it was attributed to, but it was something to the effect of invasion of privacy, writing things that people don't want to hear, that people don't want said about them, is journalism. Writing things that people want said about them is press releases. It's the nature of a free society that people are going to say things about people that other people object to. It's the nature of free society that people are going to take pictures of other people that other people object to. There is no category of unprotected speech into which the speech forbidden by this statute falls. It is not this court's job to create that category. I would argue that it's not the Texas Supreme Court's job to create that category. It's the U.S. Supreme Court's job to create that category. They have, in recent Supreme Court cases, including Alvarez and Stevens, they have expressly rejected efforts by lower courts to create categories, and by legislatures, to create new categories of unprotected speech. On the question of whether it's a content-based restriction, I expect the state to argue it's not a content-based restriction. I'd like to address that very briefly. There's a case called Reed versus Town of Gilbert, one of the U.S. Supreme Court's most recent Supreme Court case, most recent free speech cases. In Reed versus Town of Gilbert, the Supreme Court makes it clear that a restriction is content-based if it restricts the subject matter of the speech, but also it restricts speech based on its purpose. So that speech that's intended to, a statute restricting speech because it's intended to invade privacy is, by that very nature, a content-based restriction. The state would like to say, well, it's not content-based because it only applies to speech intended to restrict privacy. If you look at Reed versus Gilbert, you'll see that that is one of the things that makes it content-based. Another thing that makes it content-based is that liability depends on the content of the photograph. If you take a photograph of certain parts of a person, it's a violation of the statute. If you take a photograph of other parts of the person, it's not a violation of the statute. That's what makes the statute content-based. Finally, a statute that restricts speech based on its content, that restricts protected speech along with unprotected speech, has to face strict scrutiny. In this case, the speech forbidden by the statute is protected speech. There is nothing about the category of speech forbidden by the statute that makes it unprotected. Incidentally, it might cover, for example, child pornography, which would be unprotected. Doesn't apply in this case. It might cover obscenity, which would be unprotected. Doesn't apply in this case. So there might be speech that the statute restricts that is incidentally unprotected. But the vast majority of the speech forbidden by the statute is constitutionally protected speech. We don't have to like it. We don't have to like it. We don't have to think this is something that I would like to happen to me. We don't have to. That's not what free speech is about. We protect free speech by protecting the people who engage in the worst sort of speech. Because without protecting the rascals and the outsiders and the perverts, we can't protect our own free speech. Because once we create a category that is, okay, you can't invade privacy with your speech, how far does that go? If we can't invade privacy with our, if that were the category, okay, you cannot speak in a way that invades privacy, then any politician who claims that a newspaper has written something, newspaper has written something unfavorable about, newspaper has disclosed something that the politician didn't want revealed, politician says, this invades my privacy, and it's essentially intolerable.
But we don't have a politician here. We have a statute that is written to limit invasion of privacy in a bathroom or a changing room, and you have to have intent to invade the privacy.
Right.
We're not talking about a newspaper article on a politician.
We're allowed to invade each other's privacy, is my point, and if we weren't, then the newspapers wouldn't be allowed to invade the politician's privacy. The rule that can be applied to the individual, the private person in the bathroom, can be applied equally to the politician, Your Honor. Categories. Categories have to be narrow.
And limited to a bathroom or a changing room is not narrow enough. Is that your position?
Well, categories also have to be categories. They also have to be categorical. You can't say this creates this new category of photographs with intent to violate privacy in a bathroom. Well, that's not a category. That's just a situation. So the U.S. Supreme Court has never recognized this category. Supreme Court never has. Court of Criminal Appeals never has. And it's not this court's job now to do that. If you have any more questions, and otherwise I will give you back a little bit of my time here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Stephen Condor on behalf of the state of Texas. At its heart, Section 21.15b2 of the Texas Penal Code is about regulating conduct and not content. It is not really about speech, but it's about content of an intent to invade someone's privacy. The speech itself is, as the courts have held, not everything that has an effect on speech makes it content-based. And the speech in this case is actually very much a secondary effect. The Reed test was, is it content based on its face or its purpose or justification? And that in those cases deal with the idea that some views are, that you can regulate speech based upon the views expressed. We could have signs that only support this candidate, but signs that don't support this candidate. That sort of item. But if you look at what's the heart of the invasive recording statute, it's about conduct. It's about the conduct of taking a photograph of someone when they're in their bathroom or they're changing without their consent and with the intent to invade their privacy. Now, this statute says nothing about why they took, it says nothing about the actual content of the picture. It says nothing about that there's some sort of sexual thought requirement like the original 21.15b1 that the Court of Criminal Appeals tossed out in Ex parte Thompson. Instead, it penalizes conduct. It penalizes conduct occurring in a clearly defined space, the bathroom or the change room, and in a clearly defined manner, without the subject's consent and with the intent to invade privacy. This is a reasonable content-neutral restriction that protects a substantial interest. The petitioner talks about privacy as if it's you either privacy or there's no privacy. But I don't think privacy is this binary term where it's all or nothing. Is it there's a difference between the privacy of a public figure or any figure to have a newspaper story written about them and the privacy of being able to be in your bathroom or your change room to change your clothes or get ready for the day without somebody invading that. We would not look at it unreasonable to view, if to use their example of a reporter writing a story versus a reporter hiding in our linen closet taking photographs. I think they're very different situations, and I think that we can reasonably say one can be validly restricted while the other one is clearly within the realms of free speech. Yes, it was dicta in the Thompson case, but if the court, as the court has looked at, is noted in the briefs, the Court of Criminal Appeals has really set forth and identified B2, the bathroom case, as an example of how you narrowly draw a statute to cover a specific topic and to keep it in a narrow focus, as opposed to the more catch-all that was 21.15b1. To address Justice Pittman's question about Houston, the case, the one thing I would point out is that I think the constitutionality of the statute was at the core in the issue raised in Houston. The original writ that was filed in the district court, 11072 writ, dealt with the fact that he was being on probation for an unconstitutional statute. The trial court, denied that writ because they found the statute was not unconstitutional, and it was brought up and was upheld by this court on appeal last fall. I think it's directly square with this, the only difference being this petitioner's a juvenile, that was an adult, but beyond that, it is the same criminal statute being interpreted the same way, and there's no reason for the court to alter its interpretation of that. The state's position in this case is essentially this is a very narrowly written statute designed to cover a very specific invasion of privacy and is a reasonable restriction on any speech component that is incidental to taking photographs of people in the bathroom. Unless the court has any questions, the state would pray that the decision of the juvenile court be upheld. May I?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Conduct versus content. There's a case before the Court of Criminal Appeals right now. It was argued last Wednesday, I argued it, called LEAX versus State, LEAX against the state. I expect we'll probably have a ruling on that within a couple of months, and the Court of Criminal Appeals may be addressing the question of when a statute is a content-based restriction. Right now what we have is Ex parte Lowe, Ex parte Thompson, from the Court of Criminal Appeals, each of which says, if you have to look at the content of the communication to decide whether it violates the statute, it's a content-based restriction. Here, you can't determine whether a communication violates this statute without looking at the content, because it has to be a photograph of an intimate area, or it has to be a photograph of another. You have to look at the photograph to determine whether it's of an intimate area or of another. It is a content-based restriction. It's also a content-based restriction because, as I noted, of that intent. Look at the language from Reed versus Gilbert, which I believe I probably quoted in my brief. Do you have any questions, Your Honors? Yeah. Thank you for your time. We pray that this court find the statute unconstitutional and reverse the case to the trial court with instructions that the petition be dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, counselors. Your case has been submitted.